Those of you who go back a ways, most of you do, you'll remember when we were two congregations. And it was an interesting dynamic going back. You know, Spokane and Post Falls had long-term history where they were, and the pastorates were side by side. And there were different church circuits, not just different congregations. And again, that went back quite far into, can I say, antiquity, as the Church of God goes. But we used to kind of say, well, why are we 20 miles apart? Why aren't we together? And there was a lot of different reasons for that. Most of it was historical. We would get together on the holy days, sometimes a big activity. If we had a sports activity of some kind, we'd all combine into a single place. But generally, we met on our own. Glenn White pastored on this side, and I pastored on the Spokane side. And with various conversations that had taken place over time, with no actual directions at that time from the home office, got to the point where one time Perry and Mike and Don and John and I met in Post Falls. And we walked around inside the hall and kind of looked at it and sized it up and kind of estimated our numbers. I don't remember what we were attending back then together, but it was easily in the 130s going back at that time. And you know, we just decided to go ahead for various reasons and meet together, and we would just figure it out. One congregation sang at one tempo, another at another tempo. We had different customs and traditions. We had different things that we did. We had our own accounts. We had separate people doing various duties. And you know what? We didn't try to resolve those issues. We simply started meeting together. And over time, ever the differences just kind of went away. And Paul and I were talking in the car. He says, you know, he can't hardly even remember that there were two congregations. To him, it's all just been one. And it has been for many, many years. I appreciate that. I think there's a strong tribute there in terms of the willingness of each of us with our custom, tradition, our comforts, and our sensitivities to sit down together and just say, you know what, we're going to just meet in one place. We're going to be together. With no instructions, no order, no permission, we just decided that we would be closer friends. I think that's what God would have us to do, and I think it is something that, quite frankly, is a great blessing that it took place. I want to look at that in terms of what God is doing and what he would have us to do in continuance of that. In John 17, one of the very high standards of Scripture in terms of how we should function and what God expects. But in verse number 20, it's a prayer Christ addresses. He says, I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through their word. So he said, I'm not just praying for my disciples, but I'm praying for those who will be one day also my disciples. And he says that they may be one as you, Father, are in me and I in you. So the standard of oneness here is the standard of God and Christ in their own relationship and their own unity. That they may also be one in us. That the world may believe that you sent me. By this all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. The evidence of the unity and the oneness in the church gives evidence to the fact that God is the one directing each of us along the way. And the glory which you gave me, I have given them that they may be one just as we are one. I in them, you in me, that they may be made perfect in one. Pretty high standard. So we are together, and we've been together for years, to the point where I don't actually think in terms of that we were never not together. I just think of one thing, that the world may know that you sent me and have loved them as you have loved me. So it gives evidence of us being led by God's Spirit to the degree that we are one. But the standard is high. As God and Christ are one, God and Christ are not one thing. They're not one entity. They're two beings that are one in perfect unity. Now, it's interesting because God and Christ have all the same information and all the same understanding. So in perfection, that's what they are naturally. That's not what we are naturally. And we don't have that. But when we look at the marriage union, we're going to be one flesh, and the marriage is a type of oneness and perfect unity. But in this flesh, the husband and wife don't always have the same opinion. Anybody here other than that? Just don't have the same opinion. That doesn't mean that they cannot be one, that they cannot attain oneship as God has given us. So while God and Christ all have exactly the same understanding and information, in this flesh, our life then is going to be a little bit different. Our oneness is not going to be a oneness necessarily of personality, nor a oneness of approach, but we are to be one in spirit as Christ is with the Father. John 13, just going back, I've been reading John a lot lately, and it just so many things have come up in John that have been helpful to me. But John 13 and verse number 31 starts a passage, and it says, a new commandment in the New King James. Jesus said, now the Son of Man is glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself and glorify him immediately. Little children, I shall be with you a little while longer. You'll seek me. And as I said to the Jews, where I'm going, you cannot come. So now I say to you, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. As I have loved you, you are to love one another. Again, another high standard. Unity as God is with Christ, love as Christ loved us, portraying the Father's love, obviously. By this all will know that you are my disciples, that this has worked, that this has taken place, that I am guiding you if you have love one for another. So the church, in that sense, is a physical and a spiritual union, where our relationship is to portray God's own relationship, God the Father, with Jesus Christ. Again, very, very high standard. Unity of the Spirit and unity of the faith is a process. Look at Ephesians 4. Ephesians is a passage that is often quoted in terms of unity and in terms of what our standard needs to be. I remember when we first combined, it took time. The Post Falls members would tend to get together to talk. And the Spokane members would kind of get together to talk, and then I'd watch the scouting parties kind of go out from both sides. And they would go out and mix. And again, we had friendships that certainly extended beyond our own congregation, but there were, you could see someone would go and make a foray into the territory of the other side. And where all numbers are of the same friends, it can be a little threatening sometimes to walk in the midst of that. But there were brave brethren who did that. But you know that mixed and it melted and it melded and it blended. We don't have that. And we haven't had it for a very long time. We have our friends. We have our family. We have our closest relationships. But to watch the blending of the congregation, quite frankly, to the point to where when we came here and moved back, it wasn't like we were leaving somebody's territory. No, there was only one place and we were together and we came here. It is a wonder and a blessing. But unity, again, Ephesians 4, Paul says, I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling in which you are called. Every single standard is high. God and Christ together, Christ directing and working with us in his body, and now worthy of our calling to live up to the standard of what God called us to, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long suffering, bearing with one another in love. Brethren, we are supposed to bear with one another. Again, not gritting our teeth, actually seeking to do good, seeking to contribute, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There's one body, one Spirit, just as you were called, and one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all, through all, and in you all. And the example there of unity is that we would have unity of the Spirit. What is unity of the Spirit? Does that mean we all understand the same things and we all agree on all of the points in between? That's simply not true, brethren. I know that some of you disagree with each other and some with me and I with you over this or that point. And we assemble in peace. We assemble with a certain amount of bonding and affection. You know, if I walk up to Kitty or Tiny, it's a hug. It's always going to be a hug. I remember when Clyde Kyle visited years ago and he was our president. And I walked in and a couple of the ladies came up and gave me a hug. And I wanted to say, "See that, Clyde? Did you see that?" He was my boss, and I didn't set that up, but I thought, that was nice. Show the boss that you like your pastor as a friend. But it is a joy and a blessing in that way. Unity of the Spirit is not agreement on a particular teaching. I'm not talking about Saturday and Sunday, right? It'd be kind of hard to meld a Saturday and a Sunday, but between us, in terms of what each of us believes and understands, there have been differences, various of which I am aware of and various of which you're aware of, and we sit here in peace. So we're not talking the basis of God's law, that's why we assemble together, but brethren, unity of the Spirit is the relationship, not necessarily the understanding. And there is a difference. Look at verse number 11. What is the point of God working with us and God directing us? Verse 11. He himself gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, for the equipping of the saints for the work of ministry or service, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature and the fullness of Christ. And it should give us stability to where we're not tossed around by winds of doctrine. But again, the stability is because of a relationship of respect and honor that takes place in a marriage, ideally, and it takes place in a family, the family of God. And the example is the example of God our Father, and Jesus Christ, our elder brother. And so God has given us ways in which we are able to serve each other and contribute to each other and be one whole in the midst. Keeping the unity of spirit and coming to a unity of the faith means to focus on God and that which is spiritual rather than on our own thoughts and ways. It is more relational and less technical. And I think it's important then to understand. God gives each of us gifts in order to contribute to, in service, the unity of the church. I've always been grateful when there are problems that arise and members of the congregation go out and address or help or serve or contribute to the solution of the problem before it ever even reaches my ears. I miss Frank Wasick. Frank did that. He would go out and visit or fix or serve. That was one of his very noble traits. And it wasn't a matter of him calling and checking me or letting me know. It was a matter that after it was done, I could hear about it from someone else. There are members of the congregation here today who do that very thing, but you're going to have to wait till you're not here before I can mention it. I think I have Frank's permission, or I would have certainly had his permission. Every one of us knows that the way we do things is right, and the way everyone else does things is just the best that they can. I think we know that. But in understanding that, we have to bear with each other in love. It would be so easy to walk around and say, this is not right, this is not being done, this has gone missing. And yet the fact is, each of you are looking to see the same thing. And those matters do get covered largely. And I just say I'm grateful for that. We do it right. Everybody else is suspect. But God is merciful to us all, is he not? We had Night to be Much Observed. Used to be Night to be Much Observed was for my family down in Kennewick. Well, at some point it began to be for me in Africa. But at some point we'd be in Kennewick, and that'd be the start, because you could be down there for the Passover Night to be Much Observed, do the service down there on the holy day, and then come up here, and it'd be just one trip, and it was a nice option. We'd go out to a big hotel and have a big buffet dinner of some kind and have wonderful association. And the waitress on one of those Night to be Much Observes commented, I think, to Michelle. She noticed that there were various groups in the hotel. And they were serving in and out of them. All of our menus were basically the same stipulations, and it was obvious to them that there was some relationship here more than coincidental. And they asked Michelle, why are all you groups meeting in separate rooms? Well, it's a long story. It's a long story, but, you know, brethren, that's going to have to repair. That is going to have to repair. I don't know for sure how God will do that, but let us not be the ones who cause that divide to continue to breach. As I have loved you, unity as God the Father has with Jesus Christ. So the Church of God in various ways is troubled. The older members can remember where the breaches are and where the problems were and who said what and who did this or that or some other. Brethren, we're going to have to drop some of that from our mind. We're going to have to let some of that go and give peace a chance. If we're going to fulfill the calling God has given us according to the Scripture at the level of example that has been given, we're going to have to be willing to keep that door a little more open than maybe it would have been. Just because in some way you and I might disagree does not mean we cannot be in unity. And I have an example. It goes back, years back, to a post that was put on the Elders' Forum. Elders Forum being a communication vehicle between the elders for various discussions that sometimes take place. And I didn't write I had it in my file as I noticed it, and I didn't write the individual who posted it, so I can't read it to you, and I can't use the name. But let me use the analogy, and I think it's on the free market in that sense in terms of what the analogy would be. The individual said, every muscle in the body has an opposing muscle doing the opposite thing. That's unity. Now, the reason this came up is because someone had used the term loyal opposition. There needs to be a loyal opposition in the church. And another individual said, well, no, there isn't. Frankly, we do not need a loyal opposition conceptually for us to have in our body. And the other individual came back and says, well, let me tell you what I mean. For the muscle that lets you extend your arm, there has to be an opposing muscle that allows you to bring your arm back. And if you didn't have an opposing set of muscles, you would fall over instead of stand on your feet. So the body is designed, church is a body, to where there are different muscles that do different things, and it isn't a contest when your arm goes out and returns to your body. It isn't a contest. It's actually the way God designed it. So there are members in the body, by God's gift, who do different things. And we can have a difference in perspective or function or focus without breaching unity and love and respect, honor, dignity, and on and on. But it was a rather long explanation, but it was a wonderful explanation to me how two things in opposition work together, but they're not the same. And yet, it is balance in that sense, as the body needs. I don't think there's going to be separate, divided, opposing groups at Christ's return. They don't even meet together to have the same activity. I think we just need to at least be willing to be open in our friendships and maintain the respect and the love that God would have it to be there. Between now and Christ's return, some people, quite frankly, in those matters are simply going to have to repent. It's going to have to heal and go away. I don't know how that will take place. It's certainly not going to be by my decision, but to whatever degree we have in some way participated in that, we need to let it go and let it heal to the degree that we can in spirit and in faith. Matthew 5, again, very basic. Verse 43. Very high standard, Matthew 5:43. You've heard it said, you shall love your neighbor, hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, sends rain on the just and the unjust. If you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? If you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even tax collectors do so? Therefore, again, the highest possible standard is what God gives us to live. You shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. We are to be in unity, just as our Father in heaven and our elder brother Christ are in unity. We are to be loved, just as God is love and evidenced by Jesus Christ. There isn't a lower standard. There isn't a stepping down and an adjustment and a marginalizing of what God expects. Brethren, we have the blessing of having two congregations that walked in together and sat down to begin with on two sides of the room, eventually mixed. And honestly, to this point, you wouldn't know there had ever been two congregations here, generally speaking. I couldn't see it now, walking in the door in any way. So there is a type of unity when we're all together because we believe all the same things. Again, I'm not talking about the core issues here. I'm talking about the individual interpretation and understanding of various things. This is the Sabbath. We come here today because we believe one thing in there. But you know, that's kind of like putting on a uniform for a team. I'm with this sports team, or I'm with that sports team, and people put on their uniform and they go to the game. That means they're not with the other team, they're with this team. So at some point in time, you can believe, well, here's what we believe, and you better believe it too, and you put on the uniform. Well, that's one type of unity. I think the unity that God points out to us and gives us has to go deeper than that. God and Christ, I believe in unity, go deeper than that. They are perfect and they have perfect understanding, but honestly, brethren, we have to choose to respect and to love and to honor each other in order to sit down together and to be at peace. When we first went to Nigeria for the feast, I remember we had an activity there where, I told this story once, but it's been, I think, many years, but we had what the rope pull, what some people call tug of war. We don't have tug of wars in the church, and tug of peace sounds silly. that sounds silly. But, okay, it's a rope pull. And so, you know, the boys over there, men in Africa are a little uppity. What can I say? It's a male society. And the women are supposed to do all the work. If the kids come up well, then the husband gets credit. If the kids come up badly, that's the wife's fault. She's the one that gets up early and cooks and takes care of everything. And honest answer is, in some cases, the women are also the ones that have the shop to make the money to pay the bills. It's a male society. I don't recommend it, but it's what it is. You work within it as it exists. So anyway, the boys wanted to do a rope pull against the girls. They're going to pull them in the mud, knock them down, you know, really just show the girls. And so I said, okay, we'll do that. I'll take and coach the girls. And you pick your coach, however that was done at that time, and you do the boys. Well, there's a system to everything. And there's a system to a rope pull. Now, the system that I learned, because we used to do it in Pasadena, and we kind of learned what the ropes, like I said, we learned the ropes. What you do in a rope pull is the team, I don't care if it's a weaker team, if when you start that, the team will just stop and hold the rope. Don't try to pull it. Don't try to advance it. Don't jerk it. Just hunker down and hold it. The friction alone will keep the other team, if they're anywhere reasonably in reach of each other size-wise, the other team's not going to pull you forward except very, very slowly inch you forward, and the weaker team needs to just hunker down and hold it. You know what happens when you start pulling on something for a while after very few seconds? You get tired very quickly. And so you watch the other team as they're all breaking up and pulling at different times and jerking and a muscle away, and you just have this big anchor on the other side of your team, and you just tell them, you just wait. You just wait. And you call, you wait. And you've taught them that when the time comes, they are ready, step. Conk, conk. Everybody steps one. And you hold, and are ready, step. And they did it again. Those girls pulled the boys across the line. And they were shamed. Well, turned out, the land that we were on was not perfectly level, and there was a slight downhill toward the girls' side. And the boys all complained that that had been unfair. So we reversed the teams. I said, all right, we'll do it again. You go talk, we'll talk. Okay, we're going to do it again. Now you got to just do exactly what this is. So now the girls are pulling slightly uphill. All right, starts the contest. Same thing happens. Guys are pulling, jerking, and slowly dragging them forward, but not very fast. And then if I said, all right, ready, step, conk. Girls pull the boys up the hill, across the line. What an amazing thing if you just knew to work together, to stay together, to choose to do one thing. And it worked. And the girls could even beat the boys. That was a great day. We took pictures. We flashed them around, you know. We talked about it. We used it in sermons and got all the mileage out of it that we could. We choose unity. You choose to get along. You choose love. Maybe you're nice and maybe I'm not. And maybe you just love people because you're just a nice person. Well, I don't. I have to choose to love people. And some people you have to choose harder than others. But it's just the way it is. At some point in time, you say, I will do this thing. And as I've said, and I believe, and I try to work with my own flesh, the heart follows the mind. Choose to forgive. At some point in time, you will feel like it. Choose to do good. At some point in time, you will enjoy that. It will be a rejoicing. But we just have to simply choose. We are together. We are one. But the standard is, as God and Christ are one, as God loves us, and according to, again, perfection or maturity or completeness, God working with us. Ephesians 2, verse 19. It says, "Now therefore, you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building, being fitted together, grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit." We are being built where God will be in our midst. And each of us individually has custodian of God's presence by his Spirit. But it's talking about the body, the ecclesia, the assembly being a fit building and a presence, effectively a sanctuary for God. God in the midst of us. That is what God intends. It has to be the way God intended, God wants. I think doctrine is clearly a solid part of the foundation, but in some respects, I think doctrine is simply where we start. I think the building is joined together in love, in respect, in relationships. And I think that goes far beyond simply, do we agree on this point or do we not? 1 Corinthians 13 is very familiar to us. I'm not going to turn there. It's the love chapter, but it says, love never fails. Just do it and it will work. It doesn't fail. It doesn't quit. It doesn't go old. It doesn't, you know, corrode next time we'll do something else. Faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. That's the respect. That's the concern. That's the outgoing concern we have for each other. The Bible talks about turning the other cheek in principle. It talks about a soft answer, turns away wrath. It reduces the level of the contention or disagreement to the point to where it can then be managed. I had a friend in construction before I went to Ambassador College. I just met him on the job. I worked on a smelter out in the desert of New Mexico for about a year and a half and then went on to Ambassador College from there. And what I really liked about him is you could tease him and he would tease you back a little less. So that's not how it works normally. You know, I'm going to pay you off, and now I'm going to pay you back. And we're going to add some to the measure. I'm going to really get you. And he wasn't like that. So you could have fun. You could tease him or play a little joke on him, and he would respond, but he would reduce the joke each time. And it would eventually, on that kind of a scale, it would just go away. It wouldn't escalate. It would reduce. And I just thought that was such an amazing, unique perspective, and I enjoyed his friendship in that way, because nothing ever really got out of hand. Nobody ever really got upset. He just lived his life in a way to reduce the issues as he walked through it. I think that's wise. And I think we have a very great responsibility in our relationship, not only to not take offense, but to not cause offense, to bring down the temperature. You know, take the pan off the stove. Back away from the stove. Turn off the heat. Let the matter reduce. Let it die. Romans 12, verse number 9. Talks about our responsibility in love and how we should work together and treat each other. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor giving preference to one another. No, you first. No, you first. No, you first. Have you ever actually driven up to a place to go shopping and decided not to take the closest place to the front door? To actually, if you have the health and strength, then you're not going to be injured by falling on the ice or something. I mean, I drop Michelle at the door, okay? I want to expose the least exposure possible when she moves out. Have you ever actually gone down the line and taken one of the spaces down toward the end just so you won't have to take the space that might be a convenience for someone else? It's actually a concept to consider. It's an interesting way to think about in this life, in honor giving preference to one another. Not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. When we were raising Megan and Derek, once in a while, say I was driving and I might say something as I was driving, and I don't know if it was Megan or Derek, but sometimes they'd say, Daddy, why are you talking to that person? They can't hear you. Well, I shouldn't have been talking to that person that couldn't hear me. That wasn't exactly what I was supposed to be doing. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind one to another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. Do not repay evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. And if it's possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Do not take offense. Do not cause offense. Be ready and quick to forgive. Assume the good and not the evil. In the last years of my opportunity to travel to Africa, there was a lot of exposure to circumstance. It's a very hard place culturally in some respects. And some of the stories of the way children have been raised, or the way wives have been treated, or the way jobs were managed or administered are just honestly painful to hear. Dara used to tell me stories, and I would get angry listening to the story. And Dara's just telling me the story, and it's kind of how it was, and he got over it, and I don't know, maybe he just wanted to see if I'd get upset. But literally, I'd have to say, Dara, don't tell me that. I don't want to know. I don't want to know that. I told somebody recently, do not send me anyone else's email without their permission. I don't want to see what they said, and I don't want you to share it with me unless you tell them this is what I have done. I don't even want to know. I consider it a private matter unless they bring it to me themselves. You know, it's just sometimes the rules change because we live in a society where everything seems to be open and public. Let's not compare ourselves to the politics of this land. Let's compare ourselves to the unity of God the Father and Jesus Christ and the love of God, and become you therefore perfect is our standard. But again, Africa is a very, in some respects, a very, very hard place. When I first went over there, and before I had made friends with Dari, we stayed in a hotel, and it was an expensive hotel. We stayed in the cheapest room in the hotel, and we weren't trying to be in some Tony place. We were assuming, based on those who had gone before us, that there was a certain amount of danger and risk, and that you had to be in a place that was secure. So we started out there. It was expensive, but the first time I took Michelle and the kids, the headboard fell on them during the night. So it wasn't exactly what you'd call, you know, Super 8 here would be an upgrade, even though that was a very expensive place. First night Michelle was there with the kids, I thought it was funny. You turned on the faucet in the sink and it was orange. The water was orange. And I said, well, that's interesting. I filled the sink up with orange water and plugged it and left it there for them to see. Michelle said, don't ever do that again. That was just a horrible sight to get up in the morning and see orange. If you let it run a while, it'd clear. It was rust in the system. It'd wash out a bit and it'd look all right. But the honest answer is it was just orange. And that was a nice place. Well, anyway, went to the restaurant. Got to know the manager of one of the restaurants. There were various restaurants at this hotel. And one night we're sitting there for dinner in the evening, and this patron of the restaurant was being belligerent, and the manager replaced the waiter and took the place himself. Not so that he could put the man in his place, so that he could find some way to serve him. And the man was embarrassing to me. And when the man is finally paid off and left, you know that what they do, they take this big wad of bills and hand it to the waiter at the end. And the waiter is supposed to, in front of everybody at the restaurant, open the bills up, peel off enough to pay, and then hand it back, because you have to show everybody, look what's in your wallet. Well, this is what's in their pocket. So I called him over, because I'd eaten there a couple nights, and I said, man, I'm really sorry. That was embarrassing. He said, that is not a problem. I said, well, he mistreated you. That was rather abusive. It was distasteful. He said, look, that man might have 200 friends. And he said, if we were to offend him, we could offend 200 more people by what he then says about us. He said, my goal is to find out what it takes to serve him so that he will have what it is that he came here and intended for his meal and his atmosphere to be. Now, that was amazing. So I said, well, how did you get your job? What did you do? He says, I used to work as a bellhop. You know, he worked at the desk and he would carry the luggage back and forth. And what the manager of the hotel, this is a big place. Government officials stay in the expensive rooms. Let's just say the expensive rooms were probably $1,000 plus a night, the expensive rooms. But there were actually different buildings as well, different sets of rooms. But he said, I used to work at the counter and haul people's luggage in, and one time the manager brought somebody in to test him to see what kind of a person he was. And so he had somebody just be unhappy and unpleasant and unable to be pleased and serviced. And no matter what he did, they complained. This lady that came in complained and told him it wasn't right and that he was treating her wrong and he wasn't listening to her and he didn't do it, and she just refused to be content. And he just diligently continued to walk through the process to try to find some way to be of service to her. What does the Bible say? It says, love your enemies. Anybody can love their friends. Well, some of your friends. But love your enemies. Love them. Treat them. Those who despitefully use you, pray for them. So he made this diligent effort, never gave up, didn't find out till later that it was a plant, and the manager was testing him for promotion. At some process, I don't know if it was in one step, but he went from the bellhop at the desk to the manager of the restaurant because the owner knew that he would do whatever it took to find some way to be of service. So he said, you know what? This is what I want to do. I want to find a way to please them. And I thought that was pretty amazing because he lives in an environment that is corrupt, where people take advantage, where you are constantly under threat and exposure. If you have something, someone will try to take it away. And in the midst of that, he was able to build a value system that was internal and private, which was exposed when he was tested, and the management actually promoted him. And managing that restaurant was a very high-paying and responsible position. When the waiter had a problem with a client, he replaced the waiter and did the job himself. It was an amazing example that was set. Psalm 133. couple of psalms here that are fairly close together, but they're psalms that are so pleasant to even read, even by word. But Psalm 133, "Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It's like the precious oil on the head running down the beard of Aaron running down the edge of his garments. It's like the anointing of the high priest and the great rejoicing and the blessing that would come as a result of following God. It's like the dew of Hermon descending on the mountains of Zion. For there the Lord commanded the blessing, life forevermore." And back up then just to Psalm 127. Because they say similar things in different ways. You don't do this on your own power and strength. We do this by God's Spirit in us. Unity of the Spirit builds unity in the faith. But Psalm 127 says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain." You can work as hard as you please. Maybe it will work, maybe it will not work. But there is no guarantee. But what God does is perfect. If God builds the house, if God guards the city, then it works. It will not fail. "It's vain for you to rise up early and sit up late, eat the bread of sorrows, for he gives his beloved sleep." Blessings come from God. "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are children of one's youth." You shoot them at a target. The target is God. The target is not material success. The target is not social advancement. The target is God. "Happy is the man who has a quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, shall speak with their enemies in the gate." To the degree that God builds our house, guards our city, directs our lives, and fills our heart, is to the degree that we will learn to be unified with one another and also unified with God. And we do need to be one, just precisely the way God described that he is one with Jesus Christ. And we need to have that love and that perfection. We need to be in unity at peace.